Accession number 16356, reel 4.
They used to come round lecturing, and in our own hut we had a sporting celebrity. We had, at that time, Wolverhampton Wanderers had two wonder wingers. They were Mullen and Steen, and we had Alan Steen in our hut. He was shot down the same night as I was. So each hut also had a football team. In our case, we were called Portsmouth, and we used to have inter-hut football matches, and then there were also international matches. Like England would play Holland and Russia and all kinds of people, Serbia. And before any international match, the Dutch prisoners who were taken quite rapidly, like Holland was overrun in a day, so their army still had all their fancy pale blue uniforms with gold braid, and we had all their musical instruments. And we used to have, for international matches, we played the national anthems. And after a while, the Jerry's said, we ban all national anthems now. So when England played, we had Land of Hope and Glory after that. So it was. We had several professional footballers there, from all nationalities, and we used to have some very good games. We also had the Luftwaffe, who knew we were there. They used to give us demonstrations of low flying. And one day, a Ju-88 came so low that he caught his tailplane in the wire and almost crashed, but not quite. He killed two chaps, and he managed to drag himself off the ground, taking a bit of wire with him. So there was a very elaborate funeral, the Luftwaffe came with big wreaths, and after that there was no more low flying. Then we saw our first jet aeroplane. We didn't know what jet aeroplanes were. But from the airfield nearby, a twin jet flew over while we were watching a football match. And somebody said, it's got no props. So he was immediately thought to be mad. You see, you can't fly without propellers, can you? And the next day this thing came over again, and it was just like two cotton reels, as we thought, not two round things with holes in. And they were experimenting with that on the airfield nearby. There was a couple of chaps managed to get out of our camp and get into the airfield, and they came back with information about aeroplanes and how they were fueled up and their location. Why they came back again, we don't know, but they did. They got out and back in again. There were people used to change identities in order to get out, because in the army part of the camp they had working parties that went out on work in the fields and in the farms and factories. But if you swapped identity with someone, that was your identity forevermore as far as the war was concerned. We used to get mail from home occasionally, and we were allowed to write postcards and post letters from the camp. They gave you a letter which was something like an airmail letter. It folded up, and you got, I don't know, one of those a month, and a couple of cards which were open like a postcard. Our rear gunner, he was also in our camp, and he had been interviewed for a commission before we got shot down. And one day the commandant sent for him and told him that he had been promoted to pilot officer, and he was now an officer and a gentleman. And I've got to set an example to all the other people in the camp. And then he went to Luft 3, to the officers' camp. I also got my promotion to flight sergeant. The commandant gave me a crown for my 3 stripes. This all came through from the Air Ministry. There's some sort of communication between the countries. The friend that I had as my mucker, your mate in the camp was your mucker. He was from another crew, he was a navigator of another Lancaster on Pathfinders, and they'd been shot down on the same night as us, and he found himself, their aeroplane sort of disintegrated, I think, because he found himself in the air with a sextant in one hand and a parachute pack in the other. So he had to throw one of these away and try and hook on his parachute as best he could. And that was going to be difficult when you're falling. And he managed to get it hooked on one hook instead of two. And when he hit the ground, he got a broken arm. So I took over his management for him. Looked after him, and we stuck together all the time. When the war was getting closer to us, towards the end, the commandant told us that they were leaving the camp, and that these terrible Russian hordes were about 20 kilometres behind him, and if we wished to go with them we could, and we said we would stay behind and wait for our allies to arrive. So there was some fighting during the night in our area, and we could hear gunfire, and in the morning a little group of Cossack cavalry came charging through the camp, about half a dozen of them, and they took over, and they ordered their sentries to go on the gates and told us we were not allowed to leave, we would be shot if we did, and we just gave these guards a cigarette, and we were able to walk down to the village and do our little bit of looting. And
what did you get?
Well, we went into houses that were empty, and we found there were jars of meat. The Germans seemed to bottle meat, I don't know if it was goat or lamb, and they sealed it with like candle wax on the top. And then I went into a house that I didn't know that it was occupied at the time, so I went to leave, but the German people asked me to stay, and they gave me some bread and jam, and I had a kid sitting on my lap, and they were trying to communicate with me. And every time they cut a slice off the loaf to get this bread and jam, the loaf was put up the chimney, and I couldn't understand this. And in burst a couple of Mongolian Russians with their submachine guns demanding food. Of course, these Germans said they hadn't got any food, and then they wanted to know, if they hadn't got any food, what was I doing there? And one of them went in search of food while the other one stayed there with his gun, and I thought, well, this is terrible, the war's supposed to be all over now. But the one who disappeared found something, and he got quite excited with what he'd found, so his mate went and helped him out and I ran up the road as fast as I could. So then they told us we could go for a swim. They gave us a document that said we could go to the local swimming baths. So we were in there swimming with the Russian soldiers and Russian women soldiers. And then along came another Russian officer who couldn't understand what was written on this permit, because it was a different part of Russia that he came from, and they have several languages there apparently. So we were all arrested. We were all put in a big garden until somebody could come along and understand what was written on our permit. During the fighting around the camp, the electricity had all been destroyed, and so we had no pumped water. Everything was deteriorating, and our soldiers, who were from the engineers, they said, can we go and fix it? But the Russians declined. They said, no, we'll do it. So we weren't allowed to do anything. And then the Americans had come to the west bank of the Elbe, a place called Torgau. And as we understand it, at the Yalta Agreement, there was an agreement where the Americans were going to come to one side of the Elbe and the Russians came to the other side. And the Americans sent one truck up to us with big red crosses all over it, and red crosses on their arms and on their helmets. And they got revolvers and hand grenades and all sorts hanging on. They brought all the goodies, as they said, from their unit for us to eat, like chocolate and chewing gum and various things, just as a treat. But they weren't allowed to take anybody back. So they said, if you write a card, we'll take it back for you. So there were several sacks of these cards. And as they went out the gate, the Russians stopped them. They said, all this mail has got to go to Moscow for censorship. So the Americans just tipped it out, set light to it all, and it never went. And they came back with about 10 trucks, and they still weren't allowed to take anybody. And although we were so-called released on the 23rd of April, we didn't, in fact, come home till the 30th of May. The Russians wouldn't let us go. They said they got to get the cine cameras and the band rehearsed and everything. So we said, well, this isn't good enough. We want to go somewhere else. The conditions were very bad in the camp. So they said, well, you can go to Risa, which was a permanent military barracks in Risa, and we had to walk there. It took us all day and it was pouring with rain, but eventually we got there. But on the way we passed several German panzer units fully armed, that the Russians hadn't rounded them up, and all they wanted to do was get to the American lines. All the German soldiers seemed to want to get to the American lines rather than the Russian lines. So anyway, we got to Risa and we were into this permanent barracks, and then we were flown from there by the Americans to Brussels in Dakotas. And in Brussels we found that we'd been missing. We read in the paper that we'd been missing for several weeks. And we were supposed to fly back to England, I think that must have been the 29th of May. But because the weather turned bad, the Lancasters that we were supposed to go in were sent back without the passengers. So the following day, the weather was better, and we came in a Stirling landed at Dunsfold, which is not far from here. You probably know Dunsfold.
In Surrey.
Yeah. And there we were deloused and kitted out with uniforms of a type, because we, at the time, we'd got sort of army trousers and RAF shirts and RAF jackets and things. And we were sent from there to, via London, to Cosford. And at Cosford we had a medical, and were re-equipped and sent on leave with double ration coupons.
Did you have any long-term effects from your POW experience?
Not really, only that our stomachs had shrunk. So I weighed about 9 stone when I came home. And the medical officers at Cosford, they said, now, don't eat too big a meal, but eat little and often, because otherwise your stomach won't be able to take it and it'll affect your other organs in your body.
And your attitude towards the Germans as a result?
No, we thought, apart from the political members like the Gestapo and the SS, the Germans generally, we thought, were not much different to us. They were doing their job. We weren't treated too badly. We were, I suppose, lucky in a way that air crews were given ranks and you didn't have to work. So apart from making yourselves interested, you just had, we had our own internal discipline. If the guards at any time stepped out of line and got envious if you got a parcel, you know, and tried to take it from you, they were posted to the East Front. There was no question about their officers protecting them. They knew that if they did anything wrong, they would go to the Russian front, and nobody wanted to go there. So in a way, we were comparatively well off.
Did any of the Germans in the event get any of the contents of the Red Cross parcel?
Well, we think they might have done, yes. The Russians certainly did. The Russian soldiers were, when we told them that we were Terrorfliegers, that's what the Germans called us. They called the Americans Luftgangsters, and we were the Terrorfliegers. And if you told the Russians we were Terrorfliegers, they want to give you anything, because all the air cover in that part of the fighting was done by the RAF. They didn't have any of their own aeroplanes. So one of them even shot a cow for us one day and said, this is for you, and the poor old farmer's trying to get a certificate for compensation off him. We didn't want a cow anyway.
This was after the liberation?
Yeah. This is after VE Day, when the Russians were almost continuously drunk anyway. And they would pick up a car and drive it round till it stopped and then ask you to make it go, so you ran out of petrol.
Were the Germans in much danger from the Russians once?
In the villages, the Russian army didn't supply them with food. They just had to take what they found when they got there, and they were, you know, raping people. When I was in this house with the people, they said that the Russians had uncovered the old grandma, you know, who was hiding under her sheets, and they pulled back her clothes and told her to sleep on. They weren't bothered with old granny.
What do you think those Mongolians would have done once they burst into that German house?
Oh, I think they... the mood they were in, I think they'd have shot people. They didn't look at all pleasant.